I asked Brian, I said, do you want me to do your official bio? Do you want me to read all of this? Or do you want me just to tell people how much I like you? He said, yeah, that'd be good. So I learned a lot about Brian last night at dinner. I mean, we all know if we've read anything at all that he's consulted for more than 1,000 companies, addressed more than 5 million people and 5,000 talks. He told me last night he'd been to 180-something countries. He's spoken in 80-something countries, I think, maybe more than that now. Let's see, how many books? My goodness. He's traveled and worked in 122 countries on 6 continents. Get this, speaks 4 languages. Most important, happily married, has 4 children, and one of them is with him right now, David. You may not know this, but I posted on Facebook last night, just had dinner with a wonderful man and his wonderful son. I don't know about you, but I'm ready to take some notes and I'm ready to learn from the man, Brian Tracy. What about you? Yeah? Let's bring him on up. Give a big warm inner circle. Phenomenal. Better than phenomenal. BTPOTT. Welcome to Brian Tracy.
Brian Tracy, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Harry.
Thank you. Now, I first met Zig Ziglar when I was 30 years old. I went to a big motivational seminar in the biggest hall in Edmonton, Alberta. And I went and listened to him. It was the first time I'd ever heard a motivational speaker was Zig Ziglar. And I actually spoke to him there. And I remember that, wow, this guy is so enormous in the world of motivational speaking. And then I read his books. And then some years later, I became a speaker myself. And then some years after that, Zig and I met again, and by this time I was speaking, and so we began doing seminars together all over the country. And I would do the morning, he would do the afternoon. Sometimes we'd have somebody who would speak for 45 or 60 minutes. But we went around the country doing seminars together, sort of like a dog and pony act. I don't know who is the dog or who is the pony. But Zig was the great one. Remember, he told that wonderful story about a young person, you're going to be a great one? Wonderful story. Well, he was the great one. He had an enormous impact on us. He's an incredible man. So I'm very delighted to be here with you and with the people in the Ziglar organization. I learned so much. With regard to my gimping around this, I call this the Night of the Walking Dead. I know you probably don't watch that. Has anybody watched the Night of the Walking Dead? Well, that's how I feel. 50 years ago, I'm 73 now, 50 years ago, I was climbing a mountain in Cape Town called Table Mountain. And it's very famous. Matter of fact, I ran into a physiotherapist the other day, and he was telling me about my leg. I said, I fell off Table Mountain. He said, oh yeah, the back part, where you go down so that you don't have to pay for the gondola. How did you know that? Well, he and his father climbed that mountain. He's much younger than me. And what happened was, I didn't have the money, and so to save money, what I did is I hiked up and hiked down. And hiking it down, it's a long hike, and by this time you're tired. It's several hours. So I decided I would take the shortcut. And the shortcut, I still remember, was going down the mountain like this, and it started getting steeper and steeper, and actually it curved in. And I kept grabbing and grasping and everything else, and finally I just slipped off and dropped about 10 or 15 feet and twisted my ankle. And so I was able to limp down to the bottom and go to a hospital or a clinic, and they bandaged it up with tensor bandages. And it kept hurting like blazes. So I went to another clinic a week later, and they said, big problem here. He said, what happened was you twisted your ankle. It was almost it was a sprain. It was almost a break. And you should have had a cast on your leg, not a bandage. And so it's going to come back to bite you later on in life. That was 50 years ago. And this March, I was walking in Milan, and my legs started to hurt like blazes. By the next day, I could barely walk. I started going to doctors and clinics and got cortisone and everything else. Finally, I got back, and I found that this foot, this ankle, had seized up. It's called degenerative arthritis, and it freezes. So the only way I can do anything with it now is to have surgery. So I'm having surgery on June 19th. I wanted to be sure to be here, so I kept punting on the surgery. So June 19th, I'll have surgery. They'll go in, and they do some kind of miracle. All the pain is gone. They're going to put in an artificial ankle, and I'll be back to normal again by the end of this summer. So I just want you to know that. Thank you. But I still get up every morning and say, thank you, God, for all my blessings. Because that's no matter how bad we have it, it's still vastly better than most people in the world. Well, thank you very much for being here. I came from a poor family, as Howard did. Howard was a waiter, and I was a dishwasher in a restaurant. And so he was busy getting the dishes dirty, and I was busy washing them. And it was like a circle. And I've been astonished. You know, I read the stories and biographies and autobiographies of wealthy people, people who started with little or nothing. It's amazing how many of them started off as laborers. They started off as dishwashers. They started off as gardeners. When I grew up, I didn't graduate from high school. I didn't have a great childhood. And so I washed dishes. And when I lost that job, I got a job washing cars in a car lot. And when I lost that job, I got a job washing floors for the janitorial service. I actually thought washing was in my future. And I told that to my wife, which I never should have, because all our lives, she's given me things to wash. She says she doesn't want me to lose my edge. So we had four little babies and grandchildren and houses and homes and cars and everything else, so I kept my edge. Anyway, so I traveled. I lived in a car, an old car. When it was cold outside, I slept next to the car. When it was warm, next to the road. I worked on farms and ranches. I dug wells. That's where you start at ground level and you work down rather than up. And when you succeed, you fail, because when you find water, they fire you. It's not a great incentive system. It looks like water will go slow. We need another couple of days' work. And so I would dig wells, and I would work on farms and ranches. When I was 23 years old, I was working on a farm and sleeping on the hay in the farmer's barn and getting up when it was pitch black, 5 o'clock in the morning, with the other itinerant farm workers. An itinerant farm worker is one who works during the harvest. And go out and work all day long to bring in the crop before the first frost. And when the harvest was over, my job was gone. And when I could no longer get a job in laboring, I got a job in sales, like many of you. And we started selling stuff in order to stay alive. And I think it's the best thing that ever happened to me. But for 6 months, I spun my wheels. I got no training at all. I got a knick-knack, which I went from door to door selling, office to office in the daytime, and then homes and apartments in the evenings up till 9 o'clock at night. I would work 10, 12 hours a day, and sometimes I'd work all day long going from place to place and not even make a sale in 12 hours. And I had a little rooming house, and I would have to make a sale to pay for my rooming house and to eat. And I'll tell you, starvation is a real good motivator for making a sale. Well, let me think it over. Think it over? You must be kidding. I've got to eat today. And I got paid my commission when I made a sale. I had to come back with the cash and I got my commission. I did this for 6 months, and so it was just touch and go. And I say that selling without having any sales training is the best weight loss program in our society, because I lost about 10, 12 pounds. Just dropped, the weight just fell off. It's quite amazing. And one day I noticed that there was a guy in our office, and there's a reason for this story. And his name was Pete. And Pete was about 5 years older than I was. And when you're 22, 23, which I was at that time, being 28 is almost like being Methuselah, you know, like being a grandfather. And he was earning 10 times as much as I was. And he wasn't even working very hard. He'd roll in around 9:30 in the morning, go out, make a couple of sales, come back, have lunch with other people or with other customers, make a couple of sales in the afternoon. And then he'd go out in the evenings, and he always made enough money so he could go out with girls, and he could go out to restaurants and nightclubs. I mean, it was just a great life. And everybody looked up to Pete because he always had a pocket full of money. And so I said to him one day, I did something that changed my life. I said, Pete, what are you doing differently from me? How come you're making so many sales and making so much money? He said, well, show me your sales system. And I was talking about this indirectly before. Show me your sales system and I'll critique it for you. I said, well, I don't have a sales system. He said, well, what do you do when you meet a prospect? Well, I just start talking as fast as I can. And I hope that the prospect will stop and interrupt me and stop me from talking and buy something. And he says, is that working for you? And I said, it's not working very well at all. Because they look at their watch and shake their watches. And I wouldn't mind if they looked at their watches when they shake their watches. Bang the watch. It caused me to worry. And so I went from place to place, place to place. He said, you know, selling is more a rejection game than a sales game. So the more rejected you get, the more sales you make. So I used to run from place to place. It was a great exercise program. I'd run from place to place to give my presentation and run to the next place and the next place and the next place. And he said, no, he said, sales is a system. It's very much like a dish in the kitchen. It has a recipe. And if you follow the recipe, then you make sales. And if you don't, you don't. And that came as a shock to me. I said, well, what's your recipe? And he said, oh, it's very simple. I sort of use a funnel model. Is you ask general questions to make sure that this is a prospect, not just a suspect. And then you ask them questions about what they're doing, what they've done in the past. You ask them about their plans for the future relative to what we sell and so on. And then you ask them to buy. And I was just shocked. I still remember, to this day, I still remember sitting on a bench on the sidewalk across the street from our office next to a little park while he explained with a pen and paper his presentation. So instead of going out and talking 100 miles an hour, I went out and I asked questions. And I found that asking questions in selling and asking good questions is almost like a miracle. Because it takes you from a person feeling that you're their adversary and they have to defend themselves, it takes you to being their friend, trying to help them to improve their life or work. And Howard and I talked about this last night, is that what we do is we serve people. People who are successful in business are always looking for ways to help improve the lives of other people, to serve them, to make their lives better in a cost-effective way. And when I understood that, it was like a click. And I said, what else can I do? This is great stuff. I went out and people responded to me differently. He said, well, have you ever read any books on selling? And I said, are there books on selling? I mean, I love to read, but I had read mostly novels and some history books. He said, oh, yeah, there's lots. So I went down to the bookstore, and I still remember the first book I ever bought. It was an international bestseller produced in England, and How to Win Customers. Still remember that. And I got this book, and it was written by a man with 30 years' experience, and he'd written it all down. How do you identify the proper customers? How do you identify your competition? How do you compare yourself with them? How do you answer objections? I never read a book before, and I was just felt like I died and gone to heaven. Now, about 20, 25 years later, I was at a conference in Switzerland, way, way later in life, and I ran into the author of the book. And I still remember the book. I said, you're the first book I ever read. But after that, I read book after book after book. I read an hour to 2 hours every day. I took notes. And every time I learned something new, I'd go out and try it out. Now, this is really important because Howard talks about failure to execute. Is I didn't know, but I was doing things that changed my life forever. The first thing was I realized that sales was learnable. And that transformed my life. You can actually learn to do this really well and make a lot of money. And the more I learned and applied, the better results I got. The other thing I did, and it was probably because I was hungry, but every time I learned something new, I would run out and try it out immediately. I remember the first sales seminar. I used to listen to sales audio cassettes, the first ones that came out. I remember going to my first sales seminar all day long, taught by experts in our field. And as soon as I would learn something new, at the break, I would run out and run next door. It's downtown hotel convention center. I'd run next door, take an elevator to the top floor, and I began knocking on doors. See how many doors I could knock on during the break. And I'd knock all the way down to the bottom floor, and then I'd run back to the hotel and take my seat in the seminar. And for the rest of my life, whenever I learned something new, I tried it out immediately. And what I learned was, as Charlie Jones used to say, nothing works. He said, at least it doesn't work the first time. And maybe not the second or third or fourth time. And then I noticed that other people would try out things too occasionally, but then they would quit after the first time because it didn't work. And I realized that nothing works. I learned this long before I met Charlie Jones, decades in fact. So I would resolve, I would try something 5 or 10 times before I would pass judgment on it, because nothing works. And sometimes we make the same example. Howard and I have something really good in common. When I was a young man, I really liked Caesar salad. And I was single, and so I would take girls out for dinner, and I would take them out to places that offer Caesar salad. And the person would come by the table at that time, and they would mix the salad by the table. And the salad would taste absolutely excellent. He'd mix the lettuce and the lemon and the Tabasco and the garlic and the anchovies and everything else, and wow. And I realized one day that this person standing next to the table is not a genius. He's just an ordinary person, but he makes beautiful Caesar salad. He must have something going for him. What was it? He had a recipe. Ta-da! So I went down to the store and I bought a cheap cookbook and got the recipe. And my mother had a cookbook and I bought her cookbook. And I began to practice making Caesar salad. And my first couple of times I did it wrong and I did it cheap and I used poor ingredients and the results were not very good. But I said, no, I know it's possible to make a great Caesar salad, just like it's possible for you to start and build a business and become wealthy. It's doable because hundreds of thousands and millions of people have done it. And if they can do it, and some of these people are complete idiots. They can't find their bum with both hands. And if they have done that, I can do it as well. And it's really important that you understand that. If you have that complete conviction that what others have done, you can do as well, then nothing can stop you in the whole darn world. So I kept making this Caesar salad, and it got better and better and better. So eventually, I could invite girls over to my little apartment, and I could prepare dinner for them, which was cheap. It saved me a lot of money. So it actually helped my social life. Anyway, over the years, I got better and better and better. It turns out that Howard did the same thing. That Howard is also an expert at Caesar salad. And that Howard and I almost got into a cook-off last night, because I told him that people consider my Caesar salad to be the best Caesar salad they've ever eaten in their life. And he said, well, people consider my Caesar salad to be the best they've ever... So here we are talking about Caesar salad. But I learned something about the Caesar salad, and I used to work that into some of my big seminars. I would talk about how this is the way life works. You get a recipe, you start to improve on the recipe, and so on. And I had people write to me, I had people come up to me and say, you just changed my life. That story about the Caesar salad recipe changed my life. I'd never thought about that. That life is merely a combination of ingredients. And if it's not working, you have to change the ingredients. Now, I talked to Evan from Zig's organization a little earlier. One of the things that I fell into about 2 years ago was this whole concept of business model reinvention, business model innovation. And what we find is that every business that you have has a model. And the model is made up. I started to read the work that's been done on it, and they say that there's 9 parts of a business model. And I concluded that there were 12. And so I began working hour after hour, dozens of hours, then hundreds of hours, and I began studying all the work that's done at Harvard, which is quite exhaustive, to find out what exactly are the units, the parts of the business model, and how can you identify and analyze whether there's something wrong with them. And I came up with a very simple taste test, if you like, and it's simply this, is are your sales going up predictably and progressively? Your sales and your profits growing and growing each week, each month, each year. If your sales and profits are going up steadily in a steady line, that means that your business model is good, it's working. If for any reason your sales are not going up, if your sales are up and down, if your sales are unpredictable, if your sales are flat, if you're losing money, then what you have to do is you have to realize that something's wrong with your business model. It's just like, and women are far smarter at this than men, it's just like if you don't feel well, you've got a queasy stomach, your heart doesn't work that well, you have a headache and so on, it means that your physical model's not working. So what you have to do is you have to go to a professional doctor, in many cases, sometimes a dentist, sometimes a chiropractor. You have to go to someone who specializes in this and have them check it out. You don't just go along and suffer and say that, you know, it's God's intention for me to suffer for the rest of my life. No, if something's wrong with your physical model. And in your life, I learned this from one of the most successful golf entrepreneur in America. His name when he was alive was Eli Callaway, and he established Callaway Golf. And a friend of mine worked with him and was the vice president of his business. And he said this is one of the greatest businessmen he ever met. But here's what he said. He said, Eli taught me this, and as soon as he taught me, I said, stop the clock, and I grabbed a pen and a piece of paper, and I wrote it down, and I put it on my desk, and I read it every day for a year. It was, to me, one of those great insights. He said that your business is designed today to get you exactly the results that you are getting today. If you're not happy with the results that you're getting from your business today, you have to change the design of your business model. I thought, geez, that's good. That is so insightful. And I found that if your life is properly designed, then you are happy and you're fulfilled and you're busy and you love what you do and you can't wait to get to work and so on. But if it's not making you happy, like Howard, I wrote a book, by the way, called Full Engagement, which is a worldwide top seller, and it is on how to get your staff to be fully engaged in the work so that they love the business design. They can hardly wait to come to work, and they hate to go home. And so I spent a lot of time on this subject. And so it's the same thing with us. If there's any part of our life that's not working that well, then we have to do a stand back and look at it and say, what's broken here? It's like you're driving your car down the street. Many of you are old enough to remember when we had to repair our own cars. You're driving the car down the street, and the car's going, vroom, 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 like this. Well, then you would assume, you know, something may be wrong with the car. That's a good assumption to make. And it's the same thing with your body. If your body's not working well, if your business is not working well, then what you do is you stop and say, wait a minute, I need to stand back and open up the hood and put out all the pieces and take a look at it and see what's causing this problem. And as I was told, Evan, I said, that's not the subject of our seminar today. It's the seminar today is something else. But what I did is I wanted to introduce this concept of business model reinvention to you, and then I'll sort of loop back into it during our Total Business Mastery program. Because if you find just one piece that's out of order, like for example, when you make a Caesar salad, there are certain ingredients that we as Caesar salad experts know that you average people do not. And if you are missing one of those ingredients, or you have more or less of that ingredient than you should have, you can ruin the whole salad. And it's just, yeah, that's right. We know that because we put in too much garlic or too little, too much lemon or too little, too much vinegar. And you have to use tarragon vinegar. I should have given that away, because if Harold doesn't know it, he could never beat me in a cook-off. But tarragon vinegar. But tarragon vinegar is a special ingredient. It's very hard to get. And that tarragon vinegar, if you have just one level tablespoon of tarragon vinegar in a bowl, a family-sized bowl of Caesar salad dressing, the Caesar salad will taste phenomenal. It'll have some kind of magic to it. But if you'd use no or half a tablespoon or two tablespoons, I used to think if one tablespoon made it taste better, than two tablespoons would make it taste twice as good. Two tablespoons and it tastes awful. It's just like drinking raw vinegar. You go, you have to throw it away. So it's the same thing in your business. If you have one piece of your business that's out, I'll give you an example. When I used to start, when I was selling sales training, I would say, take my sales training program and you will double your sales and double your income within 30 days. And people would say, not interested, and slam, hang up the phone. And what I learned in advertising, marketing, is that more is less. If you make a claim that you can double people's sales, and they've been in business for years, and they've tried every single conceivable idea to make sales, and you tell them you can double your sales, they just hang up on you, because they believe that you're exaggerating. You don't know what you're talking about. They know it's not possible. So I went back to saying that you could increase your sales by 30 to 50% over the next 6 to 12 months with my techniques. 30 to 60% over 6 to 12 months, they said, great, come on down, tell me about it. And I got appointment after appointment. I could just literally go through the yellow pages, cold call, and I would get 8 or 9 out of 10 appointments just by offering something less rather than something more. And you think about that, wow. So you see all of these offers that they send you, and these offers are preposterous. You have worked so hard, you know that it's not. So anyway, one small change in the ingredients. Now, how many business models are there? There are 55 business models that have been identified by the top universities in the world and that are taught in different schools. And those business models, the models that they use now in Europe and the top universities have 9 ingredients. Mine has 12, and mine is better. And I believe within a year or so, I will have a book on the market that will be the best book on business model reinvention ever written, because mine works. They leave out things, and the reason is, I studied these guys, is none of these guys have ever been in sales. None of these people who write on business model reinvention, the consultants and the professors and so on, they've never really actually run a practical business. They've gone from university to business degrees to talking about business model. And unless you've been out there, you remember that song, The Rock, where he says, we have shed the same mud and the same blood? It's a great one-liner. Well, unless you've actually been out there and made the sales and had to pay the bills and so on, then you don't know the things. And these professors are always telling you to do or not do things, and they don't know because they have never shed the same mud and in the same blood. So what I did about 2001, we had a crash. You may remember the .com, the crash. All the companies went out of business, lost their money. People jumped out of windows and so on. And so I realized, I began to see and talk to business owners like yourself, is that most people really had what I call a broken tooth business. Now, a broken tooth business is a business where some teeth are broken. They're just holes in the mouth. And they have other teeth. So one may be on sales, and the other tooth is on marketing. The broken tooth is on marketing. And you have a full tooth on packing, but you have an empty tooth on hiring people. You know, one of the most important skills that you can develop, which you'll learn today, is the ability to hire the right people, just exactly what Howard was saying. If you cannot hire the right people, which is an art form, it's an art form, but it is fortunately a learnable art form. If you can't do that, you cannot grow. You cannot move ahead. It's almost like if you got back to your car in a bad neighborhood and find that your four wheels were gone. You're going to have a real hard time driving away. And so you have to know these critical skills. Well, so I began to work with an enormous number of business owners, small, medium-sized, and I found that most of them did not know the critical skills necessary, which we'll talk about today, to build a successful, highly profitable business. Much less did they know now, some years later, how to redesign the business so it's appropriate for what you need for today. So I decided I would hold a coaching program. And I started a program called Focal Point Coaching and Mentoring by Brian Tracy. And the program, well, I would take in 30 or 40 people one day every 3 months in my offices or facilities in San Diego. And I would take them through a series of exercises. And I would show them how to incorporate these exercises into their operation of their business. And I used to give them a guarantee. I would say, I'm going to give you a guarantee. And the guarantee, because business people are really skeptical, because everybody is trying to rip a chunk out of small business people. They're all trying to rob you and cheat you and overcharge you and underdeliver and everything else. That was my experience. I'm sure that you've not had anything like that. Anyway, and so to overcome their skepticism, especially since the market had collapsed and many small businesses had collapsed, I say, look, if you follow my plan, 4 days in 1 year, I will guarantee that you will double your income and you will double your time off over the next 12 months. And if you don't, I will give you your money back. So now the onus is on me. The most important part was that they trusted me. It's because I had a good reputation. They trusted me, so they said, okay, on that basis, I'll take your course. I know I spoke to many of them after the second or third full day, and they said the only reason I took this program was because of your guarantee. And I didn't expect to ever have to pay. I expected that you would not be able to do it. I never had to pay a refund. I never had once, and I gave the course over and over again to more than 1,000 business owners eventually before I discontinued it, and I never had a refund. Because everybody doubled and tripled their income and doubled or tripled their time off with their family by following these methods and techniques. And these are some of the techniques that I will share with you. And then later I realized that we needed to basically step it up a bit. And I developed this program called, I call it the Total Business Mastery. Now we call it the one-day or the two-day MBA. I started off with actually a three-day MBA, and then I got feedback saying that people don't have 3 days. So I made it a two-day MBA. And then they came back and they said they don't have 2 days. And could I do it as a one-day MBA? So I did. And I've given this to more than 1,000 people at a time. And also with the same guarantee, is if you're not happy at the end of the day, you can just say, I'm not happy. No explanation necessary, 100% refund. I've given this course in darkest Africa, in Kenya, and Dar es Salaam, and Uganda. I've given this course in India. I've given it in Russia and China. I've given it in Latin America, some of the poorest countries in the world, where I would suspect that these people are going to try to take advantage of me after the course. And you know what? Not one of them ever asked for their money back. Not one of them came up and said, I didn't get my money's worth. They came up and they said, you've changed my life. You've saved my business. You've transformed my life. I mean, it was wonderful, just wonderful experience. And so I put it into a one-day version, and Howard and I talked about this, and I suggested this would be the very best thing for me to share with you, this one-day version, the one-day MBA. So that's what we're going to do today. And what I'm going to share with you is some ideas. And these ideas will transform your life. And I know because I've now been teaching them since 2001. And I meet people all over the world who've become millionaires and multimillionaires and multi-hundred millionaires. I also have 3 people, graduates, who've come to me and who have become billionaires and multi-billionaires, starting off as poor people working in laboring jobs, hourly wages. And suddenly the lights went on, and they hit the right business at the right time with the right equipment, the right tools, and they became very wealthy. I was visiting one of my clients who actually called me indirectly through the internet and asked me if I would come and spend a day coaching with him in Monte Carlo. And I won't say more than that, except that he's extremely well known, but he had a fortune by this time. If you're in Monte Carlo, your information is on Google. And Forbes and others. So his net worth today is about $8.7 billion. And he was pushing a gurney on a hospital corridor when he came across my material. He's now worth $8.7 billion. His home is the largest home in Southern Europe. It's a condominium, and it costs $300 million for him and his wife. $300 million. Unbelievable. Very nice place, by the way. Amazing what you can do if you stand back and throw $100 million bills at a piece of land in Monte Carlo for any period of time. So what Howard and I have done is we've put this together, and I'm going to go through this, and I find that there's 3 ways to learn. There's 3 critical ways to learn. One is by taking in new information. So I will give you information, and all of us have it written down, and you'll read it. The second is to write things down. And I have a rule that I started to repeat is think on paper. Think on paper. Think on paper. If you don't write things down, there have been several studies recently at Harvard and Wall Street Journal, is that people who don't write things down remember nothing. Is you'll forget 90% of the information you take in if you don't write it down and not type it down. So more and more professors are saying, you cannot sit there and just type out what I say because there's no thinking involved. And I hadn't realized this, but if you're just typing it out, you're just repeating what the professor said. And you're repeating as fast as you can, so you have no time even to think about the information. However, if you write it down, you have to interpret it yourself. You have to write it down in your own words. You have to write more and less and so on. And the third way that we learn is by talking. Socrates, probably the greatest original philosopher, said we only learn something by dialoguing about it, by talking about it. We don't learn something if we don't talk. He taught philosophy. He was what was called a peripatetic. If you really want to impress people, I don't really get it. A peripatetic philosopher. And a peripatetic means walking around. And that means that he would walk around with his students and ask them questions and talk. And they would walk around, ask questions, talk, discuss. And as a result of this, they would learn at a deeper and deeper basis. Plato was a student of Socrates, who never wrote a word, by the way. And then Aristotle, perhaps the greatest philosopher of all time, was a student of Plato. And they used the same method. Take it in, write things down, Plato, and then discuss it over and over again. So it goes deeper and deeper and deeper. So that's what we will do. So we will use the finest ways of learning ever discovered in human history, and you'll find they're also the most enjoyable ways, easiest and pleasant ways. So I'm going to ask you a question, and then we will start. And it's about my favorite question. And by the way, Howard, or if anybody else hears anything that I say and they like it, take it. It's free. It's no limitation, no patent or no exclusive information. I've always encouraged people that if they hear something that I say that they want to use themselves, and so they can take it. And so they use my stuff all over the world. And speakers will come up to me, top speakers will come up to me and say, you know, I attended your seminar and I really liked the way you said that because it goes with what I teach. Or I really like what you wrote in your book. I hope I don't get into any trouble. I said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Everything is in public domain. And by the way, legally, anything that you say is public domain. So if I say something to you and you repeat it, I can't come and say, wait a minute, that was mine. No, if you say it, it's public domain. It belongs to the world. If you write something down and copyright it, then it's different. But even short pieces, people write to me and say, can I quote from your book? I said, absolutely. Anything that's short, public domain. And there's an awful lot of people say, mine, 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 like a little baby, you know, mine, it's mine, it's mine. It's not yours. Good grief, you stole it from someone else who stole it from someone else who stole it from someone else. I was at a conference with some speakers, there were three or four of us sitting there, and he said, did you ever think of this? And he said it, he said something really good, like the more you succeed, the more you help others succeed, and the more something like that. And the fellow next to me said, that is a very good observation. I wish I had said that. And the next person over says, by tomorrow, I will have. And so nothing is what does it say in Ecclesiastic? Is nothing is new under the sun. And so if you hear anything that's of any value, take it. I even have people take my seminars and name books after them. And then you read the book, and the book is, well, this is my seminar. This is my book. This is my my two-day seminar, which I began giving in 1981, I talk about the laws, various laws of success. And someone, no names need to be mentioned, easy to figure out, came along and went to my seminar three times in a row, took down copious notes, and then wrote a book on the power of the law of attraction, which was called something that is, well, not well known. And I began teaching it 20 years before she began writing about it. And she called my office and she wanted me to give her a testimonial or a quote for her book, which is coming out, which I would more than willingly have done because I always help people 100% of the time, no hesitation, except that the person in my office was on commission. And he said, well, how much does Brian get? And he said, well, there's no remuneration involved. So he said, then he's not going to give you a comment, and hung up, slam, and never told me. So I never knew that she had come to me and asked for a quotation. But nonetheless, she can have the material. Who cares if she made $1 million off of my stuff? So here's my question. And the question is, what is your most valuable financial asset? And when I first heard this question some years ago, I didn't know the answer. And then I realized that your most valuable financial asset is your earning ability. It's your ability to earn money. It's your ability to get results that other people will pay you for. It is the most valuable financial asset you have because you can lose everything, your house, your home, your car, your savings. But if you still have your earning ability, your ability to get results for people, to improve their lives or change their lives in some way, you can go back and earn it all back. That's why someone was talking just the other day about, Howard was talking this morning, about how it's the person that you become when you become successful that's more important than the money that you earn. Because he didn't say it, but you could lose all the money, but if you're still that person, you'll make it all back again. Just make it all back. And so your earning ability, which is your ability, your knowledge, and your skills, your ability to do things that enhance the lives of other people, that serve other people, that is the most valuable asset that you have. And so what is your most valuable, most important job in life is to increase your earning ability, is to get better and better at what you do, get better and better at getting results that people pay for. And people today only care about results, is they don't care about how nice. In fact, there's two books written 2 years ago, and I either read the books or the reviews of the books, and they're written by people in either coast, and they both came up to the same conclusion. They said that when you meet a new person, they were both on personality, influence, skills, and so on. They said the interesting thing is the first thing that a person looks for when they meet a new person is, one book said, is this person trustworthy? Can I trust this person? And the second thing that they ask for is this person likable? Trustworthy and or likable. So one book talked about how you develop a picture, knowledge, in the other person's mind of being trustworthy, and a lot of things, looking them directly in the eye, shaking hands with them, things like that. And the other is, are you likable? And then that was one set of dimension of qualities. The other dimension is, are you good at what you do? Are you good at what you do? And the second of all is, are you strong or competent in your work? So they looked at these two, and they found the two really blend together like two railroad tracks coming together in the distance. Is people want to know if you're trustworthy and competent, trustworthy and likable, if you're competent and good at what you do. That's the first thing they care about. Now, the reason I'm telling you this story, it's quite fascinating because I'd read both books, is they said that if you are really nice, but you're not competent, people like you, but they feel sorry for you. The word is pity. Is people pity you. And now, I don't know about you, but I have no desire to be pitied. And so there's lots of people out there that are blowing smoke with their friends and sitting around and talking and chatting. This average person at work today spends about 37% of the workday chatting with their friends. They spend about another 20% checking their email and their messages, their SMSs are on the phone. And they spend less than 50% actually doing the job for which they're being paid. And they wonder why they don't get promoted. And they say, well, it's always because of politics or something else. No, is they're wasting their time doing stuff that's of no value. So people say, oh, he or she's a really nice person. Yeah, what a shame. And they have no future. What a shame that their parents, their kids have no future. The kids will always get secondhand stuff or used stuff or stuff that's not very good. They'll always live in a smaller house. It's because the person thinks, well, if I'm really popular at work, and this is what you've got to be really careful about when we talk about loving and hugging and caring and sharing at work. Yes, but do your job well. Do your job well. You can be really nice socially. You can be friendly and helpful and everything else, but do your job well. Because if you don't do your job well, if you don't get results, then people feel sorry for you. And not only that, you have no future. And there's an awful lot of people who are like that, who think that it's a badge of honor to be really likable, and it doesn't really matter if you're any good at what you do. And that's a big mistake, and many people make that. More than 50%, more than, let's say, 80% of the population make that mistake. The old 80-20 rule is they do their job average, but people like them and they're friends and have a beer with them after work, but in their hearts they don't respect them. And we don't want that for ourselves. So anyway, your earning ability is really important, and in times of rapid change and turmoil, obsolescence, your earning ability is becoming outdated all the time. What got you here won't get you any further. What got you to where you are today is not going to get you to the top. Is you're going to have to continually become better and better because your skills are becoming obsolete, just like a piece of machinery becomes obsolete. So you've always got to be upgrading your skills. So I came up with this little model, and I called it the ladder of success. And the ladder of success says that there's a ladder, and each rung on the ladder is a skill. And when you develop a new skill, you develop the ability to get results that people will pay you for, which moves you up the ladder of income. You are now worth more money. And your boss or somebody else's boss will willingly pay you more money. The cheapest thing that you can possibly do in the world of work is hire good people and pay them a lot of money. Because they'll always earn you vastly more than they cost. In fact, good people are free plus a profit. This is not even in here. I don't even know I'm going into it. But good people are free plus a profit. They more than pay for themselves plus they make you a profit. That's why companies like Microsoft and Google and Apple will hire a person $120,000 to $150,000 in their first job and then they'll pay them $150, $175, $200 over the next 3 to 5 years before they go somewhere else. Why on earth can they pay them so much money? And the answer is because they contribute so much value. They're worth vastly more than the amount that they cost. They had they needed 6 people for Amazon last year. You may have heard of this. So they placed an ad in the technical journals and Craigslist and so on. They got 4,000 applications. 4,000 applications for 6 jobs. People came from all over the world and lined up and slept in the streets like an Apple iPhone release because they wanted these jobs. They would do anything, pay anything to get these jobs. Because if you could get a job doing one of these things with one of these companies, your reputation would be phenomenal. So the second question I would ask then is, what is your most precious resource? And your most precious resource is your time. It's your time. It's your ability. It is your ability to use your time. You can lose everything, but if you have your time, you can do anything. And so time is absolutely vital. And I began studying time management many years ago. They asked me to write a program on time management, which I did. And then later, I suggested that I write a book on time management. And they said, okay, send us an outline, which I did. And they came back and they said, we don't like this outline. However, if you were to change this and this and this, then we would have a book there. And at that time, Who Ate My Cheese and Fish and some of these animal books were popular. So I wrote a book called Eat That Frog. And Eat That Frog was based on a little anecdote by Mark Twain in 1875, where he said, if the first thing you do in the morning is you eat a live frog, you'll have the satisfaction of knowing it's probably the worst thing that's going to happen to you all day long. And it's like, you know, Mark Twain was a great humorist. And that was my chapter 15 in my outline, my proposal. And they said, no, Mike, why don't you run this through the whole book? So everything has to, setting the table, preparing the ingredients, organizing the kitchen and so on. So everything links in like a thread. And so I did. The book is now the best-selling book on time management in the history of the world in 42 languages. It just sells and sells and sells. It sells hundreds and then thousands and then tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of copies. And we just brought out the third edition because when I wrote the book 10 years ago, the social media was nowhere near as big as it was. In fact, Facebook was just getting started. So now I've written one chapter on technology, then two, and then three. Out of the same 21 chapters, we have to mix and match and so on. And so I know a lot about time management. And I found that anybody can double their income, by the way. Anybody here like to double their income? Say yes. Yes. Of course. Anybody can double their income within 30 days, sometimes within 7. Who did that? And why did they do that? I've not been here before, but somebody keeps doing that, and everybody else cheers. And I don't know. I'm looking.
That's an aha. You got an aha.
Thank you. Thank you. What is your name, sir?
John Michalidis.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Now I know. It's an aha. Wow. Okay. I could have sat here all day and not known what was going on. I promise you there will be no balloons left by the end of my day. There will be no balloons. I promise you that. You're getting a bit sloppy there. All right. And so your time is your most valuable, and you can double your income. And I put together, well, how can I double my income? Well, it's very simple. And here's another way, and here's another way, and here's another way. And I just threw them out. And people go, whack, whack, pop, pop, whack, pop, whack. Because the methods are so simple. I'll give you a very simple method that's guaranteed to work. And to double your income, let's say you decide to double your income, then you have to increase your income 25% per year. 25% per year for 2 years and 7 months with compounding, the great miracle that Einstein identified. With compounding, you double your income if you become 25% more productive in 2 years and 7 months. That means if you become 2% more productive, or even less, in a month, then you become 25% more productive in a year, you'll be twice as productive and twice as highly paid in 3 years. Now, here's what I discovered way back in the day. I was looking at all these different techniques, and I put them all together into what I call the 1,000% formula. Because if you become 25% better each year for 10 years with compounding, you actually increase your income by 1,004%. 1,004%. And so I began practicing this, what I call the 1,000% formula, and I began teaching it in some of my seminars. And people started coming back to me a year or two or 3 years later and say, this is incredible. And then 5 or 6 years later, they come back and they say they doubled their income and then doubled it again. And now they increased their income 10 times in 6 or 7 years. They said the only thing wrong with your formula is that it's too conservative, because it works immediately and it works predictably. So if you become 2% more productive, and you know how you can become 2% more productive? There's a whole series of techniques. I've got dozens of them. But one is very simply is to start and complete your most important task first thing each morning. Do not check your email in the morning. Do not make phone calls. Do not waste time. Is the night before you plan your day, you pick the most important thing you can do. First thing in the morning, you start on that task, and then you discipline yourself. Execution is Howard was talking about. You discipline yourself to work just on that task until it's complete every single day. If you start off every day with your most important task completed, you actually propel yourselves almost like shot from guns into the next task and the next task and the next task. And I'll tell you why. Psychologically, human beings are designed to be productive, to get results, to produce things. And when we do, it makes us happy. And it also raises our self-esteem and self-confidence. We feel like winners. When we start and complete a task, we feel really good about ourselves. We feel happy. And our brain releases endorphins. And endorphins are called nature's happy drug. And when you complete a task, you get a flush of endorphins that makes you brighten up. It makes you like yourself, increases your self-respect, self-esteem. You feel good about yourself. And it propels you to want to start and complete another task. I'm going to give you something that I incorporated into my life many years ago, is build your whole life around starting and completing tasks. Even if it's something as simple as cleaning the table and putting all the dishes in the sink, or putting all the dishes away. Maybe it's something as simple as washing out your car inside and outside. Maybe it's something as simple as just finishing a short task at work and finish it 100%. And this is the key. I learned this from Solzhenitsyn many years ago, is you get nothing. You get no bang from your buck. You get no surge of joy by doing something 95%. You get nothing. But if you complete something 100%, you get this, wow. If you just do that, you'll double your productivity, performance, and income within 30 days. And everybody who ever does it says, like the kids say, you know, shaking my head. SMH, shaking my head. And so that's one really simple way to do it. And I'll give you some other ways as we go along. So your job is to become more and more productive. And you'll find that the most successful people, and I have whole other seminars, in the world are people who are highly productive. And they're highly productive because they start and complete their most important tasks first thing in the morning. Because whatever you do repeatedly becomes a habit. So if you start and check your email and drink coffee and read the paper and put your feet up and so on, that becomes a habit if you do it over and over again. Unfortunately, it's fun. It's fun to chat with your friends and send some messages and go shopping online and things like that. And so it's easy. So the great problem in life is that people do what is fun and easy rather than what is hard and necessary. And whatever you do repeatedly becomes a habit. Goethe had a wonderful line with regard to habits. He said, everything is hard before it's easy. Everything is hard before it's easy. So I've just given you one way to double your income. I'll give you a couple of others as we go along. And that's the essence of the book. Start and complete your main task. People say, this book made me rich, with the one simple idea. Start every morning, not later. Start first thing in the morning. So here's my third question to you. What is the most important investment of your time and money? What is the very best investment of your time and money? And the answer is to increase your earning ability. It's to invest money in yourself, as you are doing here, to develop new skills. And here's a great question. It's not in here, but I learned this a few years ago from a time management expert. And the question is simply this. What one skill, if you developed and did it in an excellent way, would help you the most to double your income? What one skill, if you developed and did it in an excellent way, would help you the most to double your income? Now, when I heard that question, I almost drove off the road. I was in Salt Lake City. I almost drove off the road. I don't even know anybody there. And I realized this is one of the great operating questions of adult life. is, what is the... And then they did a study covering 25 years and the 500 highest paid people in the Fortune 500, and they found that this turned out to be the strategy of the highest paid people in American industry. Is what they did, like a sniper picking one target at a time, they picked one skill at a time. They didn't try to learn multiple skills, they learned a single skill. And they learned the single skill that would help them the most at this time to get better results faster. And once they had mastered that skill, clearly, then they would say, now, what one skill would help me the most? So I'm going to give you a little test to sort of illustrate everything we've talked about. I'm going to ask you to write down the one skill that could help you more than any other skill to increase your productivity, performance, output, and income, double your income. Just write it down. What one skill? Imagine that we could wave a magic wand and, like a miracle, overnight, you could become absolutely excellent in one important skill. What one skill would you choose? If somebody came by and gave you a magic elixir or a pill, you take this and poof, you're suddenly excellent in that skill for the rest of your life. What skill would help you the most? You write that down. Now here's a couple of two points. Number one, you better be right. And more than 50% of the people I worked with initially were wrong. They said, well, I was really good at this, that would help me. And after you break it down a bit, you find that's really not quite correct. There's another skill that's far more important than that, or that may be an important skill, but it's not your skill to learn. So always you double check your conclusion with your boss, your friends, your coworkers, and so on. The second thing to remember with this is that you must know the answer to this skill or you cannot move ahead. You're locked in place. It's almost like your legs are in a bear trap. Is you just can't move ahead unless you know exactly the one skill that will help you the most. And that has to become a central focus of your life and of your personal education. You could learn 100 other subjects, but if none of the subjects help you to improve the quality of your life or the lives of others, they're a waste of time. But one skill, sometimes one skill can transform your life. So, write it down, and then please turn to the person next to you and tell them the one skill that would help you the most to double your income if you're absolutely excellent at it overnight. Tell the person next to you, what's the one skill? I just got onto a roll.
Okay,
so
we're not able to hear anything.
Okay. By the way, none of this is in the workbook. None of this is in the workbook. This is our warm-up phase. All right? We'll start with the workbook right now. Now this skill, this question is a great question because here are the two discoveries. Number one is that all business skills are learnable. All money-making skills are learnable. Do you want to become wealthy? There's hundreds of thousands and millions of people who started with nothing and become millionaires, so it's a learnable skill. And what hundreds of thousands and millions of others have learned over time, you can learn as well. All you have to do is decide to do it. And of course you are. The second is that you're probably only one skill away from doubling your income right now. You're probably only one skill away from doubling your income, and if you wrote down the answer to this question, you know what that skill is. Now the only question is execution. That's why Howard and I get along so well, because it's not that you don't know, you absolutely know. It's just, will you do it? All right, so let's begin with total business mastery. And we say here, and we go, okay. There we go. Unlocking your potential. One of the great insights is that you have more potential than you could use in 100 lifetimes. Is you could never use all of your potential, and the more of your potential you use, the more it becomes available to you to use. It's almost like if you work out with weights, you build up your muscles. The muscles become bigger and stronger, and the stronger they become, the more you can lift, and the stronger you become. So it's an upward cycle. of learning. You can learn faster and faster. So we say here is how to offer a great product, increase your sales, and boost your profitability. So your business and your personal potential, we say this is where you start off in life. You start off earning a small amount. It's almost as if we begin our working life like a marathon. And we all line up and we all have a number and they shoot the gun and we start running. And then, over the weeks and months and years ahead, some people get way ahead. By the 30s and 40s, some people are earning enormous amounts. In the study that I told you, I could spend a lot of time on it, but it was simply this. They found that the average CEO of a Fortune 500 company today, this year, 2016-17, earns 303 times the average income of the person in the company. And some of those people started off at pretty much the same time. They earned 303 times. They started off even at the start of the starting line, and now they earn an average of 303 times. How could one person earn so much money? And so they went back and they said, well, it must be because these people are brilliant and well-educated and incredibly creative and they have special skills or genetic structure or so on. And they traced all the way back to the first interviews, even their high school grades, the first interviews, the first jobs they had, the first performance reviews, and they just tracked them through their career. And they found that none of those things was true. In fact, many of them are average people. Having had the good fortune of working with millionaires and billionaires and spending many hours with them, sometimes with one of them, 8 hours, an entire day, just basically talking, eating, talking, walking, talking, so on, I find they're really quite ordinary people. Have you had that experience? You meet people who have done extraordinary things, and they're just really nice people. They're not leaping buildings with single bounds or anything else. And they have just somehow put together a unique combination of things. And what they found at the University of South Florida is what they did is they developed one skill at a time, climbing this ladder of earning ability. And each skill, instead of actually becoming a mathematical skill, where it's 1 plus 1 is 2 plus 1 is 3 and so on, they found that, compounding, is that as they learn new skills, the skills help them use their other skills at a higher level. And the miracle of compounding kicked in about the third skill. So instead of getting twice as much, three times as much, they started to get five times as much, seven times as much, eight times as much. Today, average of 303 times as much. Wow. One skill at a time, as opposed to learn a little skill here, learn a little skill there, go watch TV, is what they did is they just focused. Now, how long did they spend? By the way, all the answers have been found. What they found was that these top people invested an average of 2 hours per day, 5 days per week, during the week, to get to master these skills and get to the top of their field. That's 2 hours a day. And when I was in Russia recently, I said, look, I'm from the U.S. and you're from Russia. In the U.S., in a week, we have 168 hours. How many hours do you have in a week here in Kazan or Yekaterinburg? And they went, what? How many hours do you guys have? And they said, and some of them say 40. I say, no, you don't have 40 hours. A day has 24 hours times 7. It's 168 hours. So the point is that you have the same number of hours that I have or anybody else has. So here's my question to you. Could you slice off, like a slice of salami, could you slice off 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, in order to become one of the highest paid people in your field? To live in a big house on a hill and drive a beautiful car, put your kids in private school and go to fabulous vacations in the South Seas in Europe. Could you invest 2 hours a day, 5 days a week? And people say, well, yes, yes, of course I could do that. I said, good, then do it. You can all go home now. Seminar's over. But the point is, you say, well, that's too simple. It's too simple. Yes, it is. It is simple. It's not easy, but it's simple because you're surrounded by so many temptations to do so many things that are fun and easy. But if you have the discipline and the skill, and so what they found is that young people, and I found myself doing this when I was in my early 20s, even I was traveling. I'd work and I'd make some success in sales and I'd have a little apartment and I'd go out and I'd buy a cheap desk. One time, I still remember this cheap desk was this wide and it was on bricks or something, and I would work at this desk. I always had a desk and I would always come home at night and study. And I didn't know that until many, many years later that I was doing the right thing. But I just had this hunger to learn new stuff. And if you have this 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, Ben Feldman, who became the greatest salesman in the world. Anybody here remember Ben Feldman? Only a few people remember him because he's dead now. But Ben Feldman resolved to study 2 hours a night, 5 days a week, in his little house in, not East Lansing, but in East Liverpool. East Liverpool. It's a very famous story. Came from a poor family in New York. They said he tried to get into World War II, but he had flat feet. So they said they'll only take him as a salesman if he leaves New York because he was round. He had a big nose. He had a flat head. He had a big belly. He had, and they said, we don't want you to sell in New York because you just don't fit the image. I think it was Metropolitan Life. And so he moved to this little town that had something like 42,000 people. And he said, if you stay here, you can have a job as an insurance salesman. And he did, and he stayed there for the rest of his life. And he made all his sales within 50 miles of his home so he could be home at night to have dinner with his family and his kids. And then after dinner, put the kids to bed, and he would go and study for 2 hours. He was doing that 50 years later. He was doing that when he was earning almost $15 million a year in straight commission. And he's making one sale at a time to one person at a time within driving distance of his home. And he studied 2 hours each night, 5 days a week. Became the highest paid salesman in the history of the world. Guinness Book of Records and everything else. In other words, it's eminently doable. The guy was considered to have no potential whatsoever to sell insurance, and he became the greatest. So could you do it? Yes. If you have the D word. What's the D word? Discipline. Discipline. Ooh, ooh, ooh. That D word. Jeez, that hurts. All right. So here's the second. Now, this is what some people earn. They earn 10 times as much as other people, 80, 20, and so on. And the question is, how? Oops, here we go. The question is, how? How do they get to this lower income, to this higher income? And the answer is, it's determined by your knowledge and skill. And I'll keep saying it, sometimes you're only one skill away. When I was struggling and struggling and struggling and living in a little one-bedroom rooming house and sleeping on a couch and so on, I knew that there's got to be something, and I realized it was closing the sale. So I decided that I was going to do what these people in the studies do, is I was going to study sales closing techniques. And I was going to study them, get up in the morning, study them, practice them during the day, review them in the evening. I did this over and over again. And I was astonished at how fast you could learn to be good at closing sales. And my sales went up and up and up. Within a year, I was earning 10 times as much as I'd ever earned in my life. And I was earning more than the person who steered me in the direction of continuous learning. Just simply by one skill. And if I tell you that, if you became absolutely excellent at closing sales, and I'm not talking about high pressure, I'm talking about warmth, friendliness, helpfulness, establishing friendships, helping people, and so on, overcoming their concerns and objections, and getting them to make a decision, you could all do that. Everybody here could double their income, triple their income, increase it 5 times. And I know because I've now found people like this who've gone through my courses all over the world. They say it's just revolutionary. One skill is like a dynamite detonator. Boom. But your job is to pick the skill. Your job is to pick the shot. Okay, so we say here, is you are extraordinary. You have special talents and abilities that you can use to achieve all your goals in life. And what are they? Now, you heard that what Howard was saying, what Zeke made famous, God don't make no junk. God don't make no junk. Well, what God does is he implants in each person special talents, skills, abilities, attributes from childhood, from infancy. You come into the world loaded with these special skills. Now, you don't have more than two or three. You can't be like Michael Jordan trying to get into baseball. After becoming the top basketball player in the world, he thought he'd go into baseball and become a top baseball player. Well, he got over that fairly quickly. It's because his skill was in basketball, was in dumping baskets, and he became the best in the world at it. So each person here is designed, like that design for greatness, each person is designed with the potential to be absolutely excellent at something. And your great job in life, and only 2% of people do this, according to the psychologist Abraham Maslow, your great job in life is to find out what that is. And the way you can find out what it is you'll find you'll always be attracted to that area of activity where you are most likely to be absolutely excellent. You'll be interested in it. You'll admire people who are good at it. You'll want to read about it and learn about it. You want to do it in your spare time. You'll do it even if you're not paid. There's always a sort of it grabs you and it pulls you toward you. Your job is a latent skill. In other words, it's there, but you have to develop it. It's like a beautiful farm with beautiful land, but you have to cultivate the soil and you have to plant it and you have to fertilize it and so on. So each person has the ability, and what are they? What are your special abilities? This is the great skill. It's our job as parents, by the way, is to create an environment where our children can flourish like beautiful, rich soil. They can flourish and they can find the skill area. And if it hasn't been done for you, then you have to do it yourself. And by the way, it's good when you do this because you're happy all the time when you're working away at becoming good at something that you really enjoy. You're just happy all the time. You don't have to be marched out at gunpoint to get better at it. You can hardly wait. You want to get up in the morning and do it. You know, I remember I'm a writer. I've written now 84 books, believe it or not. And I have several books on the production line. And I came across this line about a painter. And they said, how can you tell if you're a painter or if you're born to be a painter? And the line was really great. It said, a painter is someone who cannot not paint. I thought, wow, that applies to so many areas of life. A certain person who cannot not paint. And then I realized that a writer is someone who cannot not write. A person in the right field for them is someone who cannot not be in that field. If it doesn't work out, they try something else and they try something else. So you'll always enjoy doing what you were put on this earth to do. You cannot stop from getting back to it. Now, I found when I was working with my 1,000 or more, it's now more than 10,000 business owners and entrepreneurs, is that there's only 4 ways to change your life. And I've, again, written books on this and given lectures, but there's only 4 ways, and they are, number one, is you can do more of some things. And so the question you begin to ask, if you want to double your income, improve the quality of your business, improve the quality of any part of your life, is what should you be doing more of? And the answer is you should be doing more of those things that are working for you. And you would say, well, that's pretty obvious. Yes, but it's amazing how many people spend an enormous amount of time working on things that are not doing them any good at all. Sitting around drinking coffee, shooting the breeze with your friends, and checking email is a completely zero space activity. And yet people do it hour after hour, 3.5, 3.7 hours a day. People are busy playing with their screens. They call them screenagers today. They're all screenagers. And the more of it you do, the more addicted you become to it. Pretty soon you get up to the point where you get up in the morning to check your, you get up in the night to check your email. You get up in the night to check your spam, to check the garbage stuff that's been sent to you. Or first thing you do in the morning, you get up and turn it on and you check before you get out of bed. And you go downstairs and you check and you walk down. They have laws now in cities like New York where it is illegal to walk while texting. Because people who are walking while texting are walking straight into other people, straight into posts and smashing their face, straight into traffic and being hit by trucks. So now you know here, you're not allowed to drive and text. It's now a law in most countries, most states, most cities. But in this case, now you can't even walk while texting because it's so distracting and it's so useless. So you can do more of some things. So the question you should be asking is, what should I be doing more of? If I really want to increase my income, get better results, what should I be doing more of? The second way you can change things is you can do less of other things. So what should you be doing less of? You should be doing less of those things that are not contributing anything to your life. So what should you be doing less of? And since most of what you do, 80-20, 80% is useless, actually close to 90%, you know exactly what you need to stop doing if you have the discipline. Number three is you need to start doing something new. And most major changes in your life is when you start doing something you've never done before. And this is the hardest thing of all because the biggest enemy that we have is the comfort zone. It's the comfort zone that holds us back. It's the comfort zone that kills us. It's the comfort zone that causes us to keep slipping back into doing old things, useless things, things that we don't like, things that we don't want, things that don't help. So you are in a battle with the comfort zone. And Harvard did this big study last year, the year before, on business model regeneration, renovation, And what they found is the senior executive said that we know we need to change our business model, but we can't because we're stuck in this comfort zone and we're afraid of trying something new or different. We're afraid of trying something new or different. That's why I learned that insight when I was a young man in my 20s, is that things don't work the first time. And now they're finding that if you start something new in business, it's not going to work. Minimum four times, four iterations before it'll work, sometimes 14, sometimes 34. I read a story in Harvard Business Review last month, and this company tried 34 different business models before they found a business model that worked, almost like an engine that starts up or the electric light bulb that actually works. And the 34th business model created a billion-dollar business. But they have to keep trying and trying and keep fighting the tendency to slip back into the comfort zone. Many people try once or twice and then abandon it. And then the fourth way that you can change is you can stop doing something altogether. And this is one of the very best ways to change your life. There's so many things in your life right now that you know you should stop doing. So what are your answers? So here's the question. Is rule is you cannot save time, you can only spend it differently. You can only spend it differently. The time is going to pass in any case. The only question is, what will you be doing during that time? So what are you going to do more of? What are you going to do less of? What are you going to start doing? What are you going to stop doing? And turn to the person at your table and tell them one answer to one of those questions. What kind of pops into your mind? Everybody has something pop into their mind. More or less, start or stop. And for the rest of your career, whenever you're frustrated with your results, what should I do more of, less of, start or stop? And there's always an answer. And the answer can change your life. The answer can make the difference between average income and wealth. We'll do it when I get to your house or you get to my house. That's a great idea. Just time constraints. Okay, moving along now. Now this sounds very simple, but from now on, whenever you have a goal, ask these four questions. Whenever you have a problem or a block, ask these four questions. Whenever you have an obstacle, ask the four questions. And it's quite astonishing, if you ask the questions and you just remain open. Actually, one of the things that we've learned is always, always believe that there's a solution. And the solution is in one of these four questions. You'll always find it. It's almost like there's a diamond in amongst the wheat, and if you absolutely believe it, it's there. It's there. The ability to have positive expectations is quite astonishing. Now, this leads us to the highest paid work that we do. And that's another question. What is the highest paid, most valuable work that you do? And the answer is thinking. Thinking is the most important work that you do. And why? And we work this all out. The potential consequences of your thinking makes thinking the most important and valuable activity you engage in. Now, here's a balloon popper, and it's something I learned when I began studying time management, is that something is important in life to the degree to which there are big potential consequences for doing it or not doing it. The magic word is consequences. Something is unimportant if there are low or no consequences. So you'll find that big people, important people, do things with big potential consequences. If they do them or don't do them, it's going to be important. If they do them and do them well, it's going to be important. If they do not spend their time doing things of low or no consequences. Warren Buffett, is great one-liners. Warren Buffett was asked, what is your secret to success? And this is all written down. He said, my secret to success is that I say no to everything. No matter what people want, I say no. If you ask me to do something, I say no. The answer is no. No, 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 no. There is a principle that's not in this course, but basically it's called the law of three. It says that if you make a list of everything that you have to do in a week or a month, you'll come up with 20 or 30 or sometimes more tasks. But if you go over the tasks, you'll find that only three of those account for 90% of all the value of everything you do. Only three of the things you do have any consequences at all. All the rest are simply time passers, time wasters. They have no difference at all. If you do them or don't do them, it makes no difference. So you always think in terms of consequences. What are the consequences of doing this or not doing this? And there's only three tasks. And the question is, what are the three tasks? And it's interesting because Warren Buffett, starting from nothing, now the second richest man in the world, he said that's what he has found. There's only three tasks, two to three. In IBM, when IBM got into serious trouble and they turned it around, they taught this principle throughout IBM. Is there's only three things that you do that account for all the value that you contribute to this company. What are those three things? And whatever they are, do only those things. And I teach this at much greater length because I've written about it, but I can tell you this, that if all you did was work on your big three each day, all day, you'll double your income. Simple as that. And what do? You say no to everything except the big three. And you think on paper. You do not start work without writing it down and analyzing it, and of all the things that I can do, which has the greatest potential consequences. The reason that people waste their lives is because they do things of no importance, do things that don't matter. Now, thinking, when you think, your thinking determines the quality of your decisions. The quality of your decisions determines the quality of your actions. The quality of your actions determines the quality of your results, and results are everything. So everything comes back to thinking. That's why your mother told you, take some time to think about it. Turn it over in your mind. Do not move quickly. Well, when I began to study this many years ago, and so about 2 years ago, I was approached by the biggest publisher in the world. And they asked me to write two books for them. They said, we would like you to write two books for us. And if anybody knows anything about publishing books, you'll know that that's absurd. It just never happens. You have to write a book, and sometimes you have to plod from door to door, from publisher to publisher for years before somebody will even look at your manuscript. But because I have published so many books, they came to me. And I said, okay, I'd like to write a book called Thinking for a Change. And what I did is I have been developing over the years 10 different ways of thinking which contrast with each other. This is what successful people think. This is how unsuccessful people think. And I put this book together, and they said they didn't like the title, so they changed the title to Get Smart. How to think the way the most successful people in our society think and act. And so we published the book last year, and it's a top seller worldwide. It's called Get Smart. And it contrasts 10 different ways of thinking. And they're really neat ideas. I mean, you have a lot of fun with them. But the last chapter, which is the biggest chapter, is rich thinking versus poor thinking. How do rich people think? And how do they develop this thinking? Napoleon Hill found that all rich people think differently from poor people. No one was born with these thinking skills, and all of them are learnable. And so if you just start to think, and then decide, and then act like rich people, you soon start to get the same results that rich people get. And if you don't, you don't. And nature's neutral. The universe is neutral. If you think like rich people, you get rich people's results, and if you don't, you don't. And people say, Now the logical thing would be to say, well, how do rich people think? There's a good question. And now I'm finding I'm being asked to speak on this subject all over the world, including yesterday. I've been asked to do a special seminar, on a full-day seminar overseas on the contrast between rich and poor thinking. And so if you want to be wealthy, this is how you think. And then you think, how do they think in business? How do they think in relationships? How do they think in hiring? How do they think in investing? How do they think with regard to money? And these are all learnable skills. Just like you can learn to type. Some people learn to type a different language. You learn to type English. Everybody else learns to type their language. You can learn any new way of thinking that you want. And if you learn that way of thinking, you get that way of results. You think, well, it can't be that simple. Yes, yes it is. Because if a person comes from a poor background and works their way up and finally becomes wealthy and they lose all of their money in an economic crash or something else, well, a year later they make it all back again. They still got the thinking skill. The thinking skills are still there. They just make it all back again. And this we've heard so many times, thousands and thousands and thousands of times. So you can do that. Is thinking is the most important thing of all. Now here's what we found with regard to thinking, is this is how most people think. And this is basically the first chapter, is they think in what is called stimulus response. Something happens, they immediately respond. Something happens inside of them. They get an idea, they read something, they see something, somebody tells them something, and they immediately respond without hesitation. So the stimulus and the response are almost simultaneous. However, the superior, that's the normal thinking process, the superior thinking process is they have a stimulus, and then they have a response, but in between they put a pause. And the thought between the action and the reaction determines your entire life. And now we're finding one of the characteristics of rich people is rich people take time to think before they respond. They take time to think before they act. They take time to think even before they speak. Is they put a gap so that their mind gets a chance to work with the information and turn it over in their mind before they actually do something. And so most of the mistakes that people make are they act too quickly. They don't take enough time to think through what they're doing. And then you find that the smartest people of all, it's one of my chapters, it's called Informed versus Uninformed Thinking, is you'll find that the most successful people get a lot of information before they make an important decision that has a lot of consequences. If it has no consequences, like ordering from a buffet, do it quickly. But if it has big potential consequences, and once you've made the decision, you can't go back, then they'll take a lot of time to think. My first real mentor, I call him the big boss. I use the words the big boss because all over the world, everybody knows what the big boss is. And working with the big boss, he started with nothing and he was worth $800 million when I worked with him. And he took me under his wing, and he would bring me down to his office for an hour to 2 hours every evening when the offices were closed, about 5:30 to about 7 p.m., and we would sit and talk. And he did not have, at his level, he owned more than 200 companies. At his level, he didn't have people that he could just talk to freely, but he could talk to me. And so he would. And I would shut the you-know-what up, the heck up. You thought I was thinking of another word, weren't you? So I shut the heck up, and I listened. And I would ask him questions and listen. And my wife always knew that I'd be home late for dinner. Well, my home was about 15, 20 minutes from the office, and she knew that we would have dinner at 7:30 because if I was not there, it meant that the big boss had invited me down to his office, and he just talked about life and business and money and decisions and things like that. To this day, as I sit here, I can still see those times, and they were some of the most important times of my life. And he was smart. He had what is called a photographic memory, in that he could take a contract like this. He could take a contract and read it from the back. He'd read it from the back page, 40, 50 pages, like this. He'd read it. This we need to actually check it with the lawyers, because I think this. And 6 months later, I could come in and say we're working on this, and he'd say, well, what happened to the clause on page 23? He could remember the contract 6 months later. I had to carry it around with me and look it up. But my point in telling you this story is that whenever he had a big decision with consequences to make, he would always punt it for a day, 2 days, 3 days, a weekend, a week. He would put it off. He said, let me think about that. From my young, amateurish perspective, it was a 2+2 question. Well, the answer is simple, I would say to him. He said, there's maybe more to it. Let me think about it for a while. And he would just put it off. And then he would come in 2 or 3 days later, and he would say, I've been thinking about that discussion that we had about that decision. Yes. He said, this is what I think we'll do. And he would start to explain it, like a machine, like a computer. And he would have insights into whether what to do, what not to do, what the danger spots were, ways that we could take advantage of it. And I would just sit there, just like a baby, and listening to him, because he was so smart. But he never made a decision quickly, even though he's one of the smartest persons that somebody ever met in their life. He always punted an important decision. He always took a few days to think about it. I never forgot that. It's just a little, he say, it's just a little bit too early to make a decision. We need to get more information. We need to be better informed. Okay, so the key is responsibility. And this is a really great historical concept, is that people are successful to the degree to which they can respond effectively. If they can't respond effectively, then they'll always make decisions. And bad decisions, and the bad decisions will lead to mistakes, and the mistakes can kill you. They can actually sink a business. They can sink a career because they don't take the time to think about it. So, and I can tell you my favorite two words, and there's lots of people in this room who can identify with, my favorite two words with regard to money are the words due diligence. And I thought and taught and learned and shared due diligence for decades, and then I didn't do it in a large investment. And it was the worst mistake I ever made financially. I've recovered from it, mind you, but from then on, due diligence is everything. I could walk around with a sign, due diligence, due diligence. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Biggest mistakes that we make in life is we don't check enough first. We don't think enough about them. So this brings us to zero-based thinking. And the question is there anything in your life that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't get into again today if you had to do it over? And the answer is, of course. There are so many things that we wouldn't get into. And I learned this technique of thinking decades ago. And what I have found is that the smartest people in the world use this technique. So I do strategic planning for corporations. The first strategic planning job I did was for a $1 billion company with huge branch offices, a department store company all across the country. And I had done some management training with them. And they said, is there anything else that you can do with us? We like the way you think. And I said, well, I do strategic planning. Because I'd written it down as a goal. I wanted to do strategic planning. And I had never done it before. And so I said, yes, I do strategic planning. Yes, yep, me, strategic planning. I'm the one. And says, well, let's look into that. And they did their due diligence. And they did their research into my background. And they asked me a lot of questions. And the president said, all right, we'll turn over the company to you. And so I said, well, I read it in the books. We'll withdraw to a resort in the mountains for 3 days. And I will prepare a pre-work manual. So everybody will fill in all the answers to these questions. Then we'll all go to this resort. And then we will sit in a room for 3 days around a large room. And I would take them through this entire process of strategic planning. They told me later it was the best 3 days in the history of the company. It was just so astonishing because it opened so many eyes, so many questions, so much stimulation. And after that, okay, we'll stop. What time would you like us to stop? 3 minutes? Perfect. Okay. And so I've now taught strategic planning all over the world to small companies and to large companies, to American companies and to international companies, even Russian companies and Indian companies and Asian companies, Chinese companies. And so this question is an incredible question because everyone has an answer to this, and if we don't ask and answer this question, we can go off in completely the wrong direction. So we say here, so there is a series of questions here, and we are just about for a break, but ready for a break. So we're going to take a break now, and then we're going to come back. And then I'm going to ask you to answer these questions. And the questions are practicing zero-based thinking in different areas of your life. Is there any relationship, business or personal, that you wouldn't get into again today if you had to do it over? And I call this a quink analysis. K-W-I-N-K, knowing what I now know. Is there anything that I'm doing in my life that I would not get into again if I had to do it over? And I know something about you, and you know something about me, that in times of turbulence today, all of us have at least one area, whether it's business, relationships, money, sales, products, services, commitments of any kind, we all have at least one area that is that we would never get into again. And how can you tell if you're in a zero-based thinking situation? It's very simple. It's called stress. It's called stress. It was whenever you experience resistance, stress, frustration, anxiety, you're not making progress or results, you're not getting ahead and so on, you have to ask yourself, if I was not doing this today, would I get into it again today? If the answer is no, then the next question is, how do you get out and how fast? And the reason is because once you answer no to this question, the situation is dead. It's over. It's finished. You cannot go back. You cannot save a situation. If you say, I would not go into this partnership, I've taught this with large groups of men and women. The average is 38% of husbands or wives would not get married to the person that they're married to again today if they had to do over. And the only reason they stay in the marriage is for economic reasons. It's they got all the bills and commitments and they have to keep their kids in school and so on. It's very common. I know a lot of people here are not making eye contact with me. But it's the same thing with products and services. Is there any product that you're offering? Is there any part of your business that you're doing that knowing what you now know, you would not get into? So we'll come back and we'll revisit this at the end of the break. And when is the break? Well, how long is the break?
Well, actually, we're ready for break. But before we go to break, I'd like for you to tell them about what you have available at the back table.
Okay. I do not sell books, by the way. The markup on them is very low. But we do have a book, because Howard has bought 300 copies of this book. It's Eat the Frog. This is the international bestseller. Best-selling book on time management in the world. And guaranteed, there's at least one. It's 21 chapters. At least one chapter will give you an insight to double your income. And they're all back here. We have one for everybody. And how are they going to be distributed? I go back and sign.
Well, what we're going to do, so here's our next steps. In just a minute before we break, you're going to go to the back of the table, get your books, get one for yourself, buy them for your friends. You definitely want to get Brian's book. And then we're going to line up. So Brian's going to be doing a book signing, and you definitely want to do this. This is before you go to lunch. So buy your book, go to the side here, line up against the wall, get your book signed, and by the time we get the books done, then lunch will be served out in the hallway there, and then we'll be ready for the rest of the afternoon.
Wonderful.
So, anything? Yes, you're going to get your plate and come back in here, but it won't be ready until after we go through the book signing process. So can we give a huge, huge round of applause to Brian Tracy? All right, we will see you. Get your books, do the signing, have lunch, and we'll be back starting at 1 o'clock.